Great to have you along on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. You know, there are fewer bugs than there used to be, and, you know, that might mean a better time in your backyard barbecue. But the loss of insects may be a disaster in the making to our ecosystem. We're going to be talking about that today with our guest, Elizabeth Colbert. Elizabeth is a journalist and author, best known for her Pulitzer Prize-winning book, The Sixth Extinction, An Unnatural History. So we'll ask her about the research surrounding the loss of bugs and what it means to the planet. She wrote the cover story for National Geographic on this, and so it's really, I'm looking forward to talking with her, and I'm certainly hoping you'll join in with your own questions or observations as we move along today. Are you seeing fewer insects in your area? What are you doing to increase their numbers, if anything? What would you like to know about the effects of fewer insects? Give a call at 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Again, love to hear from you. And Elizabeth Colbert, welcome. Thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So, I, as I mentioned, you recently wrote the cover story for National Geographic's May issue, and it was titled, Where Have All the Insects Gone? So, how did you come to work in this area or on this story?
Well, what's sort of become known as insect decline is it's a pretty big topic these days in conservation biology circles. Insects are at the bottom of a lot of food chains, and so their importance to the functioning of ecosystems is really impossible to overstate, I think, terrestrial ecosystems at least. And so that's really how the story came into being. And a wonderful, to give a plug for National Geographic, a wonderful photographer, David Litschwiger, did the photos, which are really spectacular.
Yeah, they are indeed. Well, you know, one of the things you write about in the column in your story is the value of insects, and I think we know a little about the value, but they perform, I think there were five crucial tests or something like that, of crucial jobs, I should say, of insects.
Yeah, insects are, you know, really sort of the engineers, as it were, of a lot of the world as we know it. They pollinate flowering plants, so any plant that puts out a flower probably needs something to pollinate it. In the vast majority of cases, that role is filled by an insect. Insects are crucial to decomposition. They start the process. Insects, like, you know, termites, for example, they start the process of breaking down organic, dead organic material that, you know, sort of the end stages are then taken over by things like bacteria. But insects take the first crack at it, as it were. They control other pests. It's another thing, important thing to keep in mind, that insects keep other insects in check. And they, as I alluded to, they're also crucial food source for birds, for example, bats, birds, you know, you name it, you go down the line. So they're really crucial to, you know, any kind of food web that you can think of on land.
Yeah, one of the points that struck me as I read your story was the pointing out that a bee can pollinate, just talking about one of those aspects you were discussing, pollination, a bee could pollinate 3,000 flowers a day.
Yeah, bees are extremely efficient pollinators. Now, I mean, bees are really fascinating. Honeybees, which are the bees that are often brought in to pollinate crops, you know, an apple crop, for example, or a blueberry crop, you will, anyone who's involved in agriculture will know that you often, you know, rent beehives, and there are people who make their livelihood doing that, and colony collapse disorder, which was got a lot of attention about 10 or 15 years ago, is a disorder of honeybees. Now, honeybees are actually not native to North America, this kind of honeybee that we use for pollinating crops. They're just great generalists. They're really native to Europe, and they were brought over already with the earliest European colonists. So they are an introduced species, and they are basically livestock. They are treated as livestock. They're, you know, fed and schlepped around the country just as we would treat livestock. Now, there are many, many native bees in North America who are also really crucial pollinators. And those bees, in many cases, people are very worried about them. You know, what are we doing to our native bees? So it's important to sort of draw a distinction in the bee world.
Yeah, for sure. Kathy and Baronet, it's your turn. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Say that the thing we have done that's had a major impact on both the number and variety of insects we see is planting more native plants. In fact, my husband has turned several acres into a native tall grass prairie. But up near the house, for instance, I've planted Verdensbauer, which is a native clematis. And this year when it bloomed, I think I saw no less than four or five different bees that I've never seen before. So I just wanted to make that comment. We've really seen a lot more variety and greater numbers.
Kathy, thank you for calling. Elizabeth, maybe a comment from you.
Well, I think Kathy made a great point. It's a really important point. We have transformed a lot of this country into territory that's really inhospitable to our native insects. Part of that is, you know, plowing down of the prairie. You know, part of it is dousing things with insecticides. Sort of one of the great conservation projects of our time that could involve, you know, anyone with a backyard or even with a, you know, patch of dirt sort of, you know, on the street where they live outside an apartment building or a brownstone, is to get native plants in there that will attract and feed, you know, not just attract, but provide sustenance for native pollinators. And that is a great project that I think virtually all of us can be involved in some way to try to, I don't know if I want to say remedy this problem, but counteract a lot of the big forces that are out there driving insects over the edge.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Kathy, for calling. Appreciate your call very much. Well, there are some, bugs dominate the world in a way. I mean, there's a lot of bugs.
There's a lot of bugs. There's a lot of bugs individually. I think the figure that is mentioned in the story is it's like, you know, 10 quintillion bugs at any given moment on Earth, and just maybe also in terms of sheer number, in terms of sheer biomass, insects or the broader class of arthropods, which also includes, you know, things like spiders, are just phenomenally important. And another thing that's important to keep in mind is when we talk about, you know, the diversity of planet Earth, a great amount of that diversity, an astonishing amount of it, is made up of insect species. There are roughly a million species of insects that have been named, and it's estimated that there are probably 4 or 5 million more out there that have not been identified by science. Now, you contrast that with mammals, right? So we probably do know, you know, pretty much every species of mammal that's around on planet Earth today. That's only about 5,000 species.
You'd like to be able to put them all on grab them all together and put them on a scale and see how much they all weighed. They're all pretty small individually, but there'd be some tons and tons of insects there. Oh, my God, goodness. We're talking with Elizabeth Colbert today, journalist and author. And she recently wrote the cover story for National Geographic's May issue. It's titled, Where Have All the Insects Gone? She's going to be staying with us right up until 12:30 today. We'll take a look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And then we'll be back and talk about some of what's going on in Costa Rica and Germany and elsewhere. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. You might think about insects as the glue that holds the world together, and what would happen if they disappeared? I'm telling you, it wouldn't be good. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the loss of insects with our guest, journalist and author Elizabeth Colbert. Her work includes the Pulitzer Prize-winning book, The Sixth Extinction, An Unnatural History. She recently wrote the cover story for National Geographic's May issue called Where Have All the Bees Gone? So love to hear from you. What questions do you have about the loss of insects? What experiences do you want to share? Personal experiences relating to them? Give a call at 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Or you can email us. And the email address is ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Been a lot of research, at least in Europe, Elizabeth, about this. And talk about what you uncovered as it relates to Germany, for example, and the kind of research they did and what they were finding.
Well, it was a study that came out of Germany that really, I think, got a lot of people's attention 3 years ago, so in 2017. And what that study was, it was a long-term sort of series of traps, insect traps that had been set out really not to look at insect decline at all. But when the researchers sort of went back over their data at a certain point, they went, wow, you know, we're really seeing a lot fewer insects in these traps than we used to. They did a big sort of went back to a bunch of sites they'd been to 10, 20 years earlier and found this really dramatic decline, 76% in the biomass. So just, you know, sort of the weight of all of these insects that they would collect in these traps and then basically preserve in ethanol. And then more researchers in Germany, so that was a sort of stunning and astonishing figure. And then another group of researchers in Germany went out and, you know, basically confirmed these results. And the question, you know, really, I mean, there's many questions, and unfortunately there are more sort of unanswered questions than there are answered ones. So one question is, you know, what caused this tremendous decline over this period in Germany? Let's say it's fairly representative of Germany. And then the next question is, how representative is that of what's happening globally? And both of those questions are really open at this point.
Yeah, for sure. Liam in Eau Claire has something for us. Let's go there. Liam, hi. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, I am I did a forensic category a couple years ago, and some of the questions were about colony collapse disorder, and some of the information that I found was that a pesticide called neonicotinoids, I believe, contributed extremely to colony collapse disorder, and I was wondering, has there been any restrictions about neonicotinoids that could assist in stopping colony collapse disorder?
Well, neonicotinoids are very it's a pretty hot topic. They're kind of a new generation of pesticide. They're what's called systemic pesticides, so they're often sort of incorporated into the plant, and there's a lot of fears that they are contributing to not just colony collapse disorder, but, you know, to insect declines more broadly. And in fact, in Europe, they've been banned for a few years now. And so I think we will start to, now they can be persistent sort of in the environment, but I think we will start to get some sense of how much weather and how much, you know, they're sort of contributing to these phenomena as we go forward, and as places where they're not being used anymore, we can sort of compare before and after and try to get a handle on that.
Yeah. Liam, thank you. Wayne in Appleton, your turn. Hi, Wayne.
Hello. I'm just wondering, you know, what can I do, you know, as a resident of a city to promote more insects in my area? I mean, I don't use herbicides. I have a lot of butterfly gardens, so that attracts different things, but it seems like on my milkweed, I get aphids, or I get milkweed bugs, or I'm not getting the beneficial bugs that I need. So what can I do?
Well, I don't want to, you know, claim to be an expert on the actual individual plants, you know, that you should be planting in Wisconsin. But I think if you go, I'm sure there are websites that talk about, you know, sort of native pollinator-friendly plants in Wisconsin. And then, you know, if you're at your local sort of garden store, and unfortunately, I should say, and I don't want to, you know, bash garden stores, but, you know, there's a lot of non-native plants being sold. You know, that's what we tend to plant in our gardens. So you also kind of need to find either a seed supplier or a garden store that is going to provide you with the kind of plants that you want, native plants. And even milkweed, you know, for example, comes in many varieties, so you kind of have to know exactly what you're planting.
Yeah, and milkweed attracts some of those insects you were talking about that know that monarchs, that's where monarchs are, larvae might be, or where they're getting food, and so they go there because then they can prey on the monarchs a little bit too.
Well, monarchs are poisonous. They're not. They should not be.
Yeah.
You know, but you know, monarchs are the sort of poster child, really, in the U.S. For insect decline. Once again, we don't know exactly how representative they are, but there are, you know, eastern monarchs and western monarchs who make this, you know, fantastic migration from Mexico and then all the way up here to where I live, you know, Massachusetts and further north, and their numbers have just plunged, you know, and the western monarch in particular is in, you know, terrible shape. So anything that we can do, and once again, unfortunately, it's somewhat debated. What is the problem? Is it a food shortage? Is it because we've, you know, just dug up, you know, so much of their they rely solely, you know, on milkweed as a food source. So are they short of food, or are they being hit with insecticides, or what is it? There's continuing debate about that too.
And I'm thinking about the Midwest here and the upper Midwest, and I know there was, I think you had a line in your story about mayflies in the upper Midwest.
Yeah. Someone did a study where they looked at sort of, I believe they looked at aerial photos, you know, and mayflies form these huge clouds, basically, and they found that over time, you know, the numbers were also, once again, really dramatically dropping. So, you know, the evidence is coming from a lot of interesting sources. And one of the problems that we have in sort of, you know, nailing down, you know, are we really seeing a catastrophic insect decline or not, or is this just sort of anecdotal evidence, is that we don't have a lot of really good data sets on wide groups of insects. Insects are just so diverse, so numerous, and we just have tended to kind of overlook them, to be honest.
Yeah, for sure. You write about Costa Rica in your piece, and talk about what you found in Costa Rica.
Well, Costa Rica is, you know, really important because, I mean, it's not Costa Rica per se, but it's a, you know, tropical environment. So one of the questions in this whole area, one of the, as I said, many open questions is, are we looking at a phenomenon that's restricted to temperate latitudes? Are we looking at a global phenomenon? And there's a real shortage of data from the tropics. So one of the reasons to look at Costa Rica is people have been studying insects there for quite a while and have some results that seem to suggest that this phenomenon is also taking place in Costa Rica, including in some pretty, pretty, you know, relatively untouched parts of Costa Rica. So that, you know, raises real alarm bells. Is this a function of climate change? Many scientists believe yes. And one of the important things to realize about the tropics is that in places where you tend to have relatively stable temperatures, very small shifts in the weather could potentially drive a lot of insect species that rely on, you know, certain conditions. They can't cope with even relatively small changes. It might be even, climate change might be even more dangerous for them than it is here in the temperate latitudes, where we tend to have a lot of temperature fluctuation between, you know, winter and summer. Spring and fall. So our species here up here in the northern latitudes may be more sort of adapted to deal with temperature fluctuations if it's true that creatures in the tropics are so narrowly adapted to temperatures that are changing. That could be a really, really serious problem. And another thing that really needs to be pointed out is that, you know, most species live in the tropics. When we talk about the diversity of the Earth, once again, you know, most of it is insects, and most of those insects live in the tropics. That is where just the richness of species is much, much greater than it is in a place like Massachusetts, where I live, or Wisconsin, which were glaciated, you know, until, say, 12 or 15,000 years ago, and everything that lives here now, where I live, had to return in the last 11 or 12,000 years. So we live, those of us who live in the temperate zones, live in a pretty undiverse part of the world.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, what's worrying, well, maybe you gave a specific example of one researcher who was even having trouble finding an insect in Costa Rica.
Yeah, I mean, there was a very vivid example where, you know, they used to put up at this research station, they would put up a white, just a, sort of a sheet, and leave a light on, you know, to attract insects at night, and people would gather around this sheet to just watch the incredible variety of insects that were attracted to the lights. And in recent years, people have stopped bothering to go because there's so few insects there. And I found that was a really chilling and very vivid illustration of what seems to be going on.
You know, I can see that it is chilling indeed. I can see Europe, okay, Germany, for example, is a highly developed country. Their agriculture and you know, just the number of people. You can envision, all right, insects, you know, fewer insects there just because of the lack of habitat.
Right, yep.
But then you turn around and look at Costa Rica.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, you know, I don't want to say every place, but, you know, even in Costa Rica, more and more land is being devoted to agriculture. So, you know, it's hard. It's just very, very hard to tease out exactly what the stressors are that on insects and, you know, on everything, obviously. But definitely for precisely the reasons that you're pointing to, that some of these researchers are on pretty pretty untouched areas and are still seeing insect declines, that kind of has caused them, as well as the evidence. I mean, once again, they try to look at, okay, try to correlate what they're seeing in insect numbers to what's going on in the outside world. And, you know, some people would argue there is a strong correlation to climate change. Other people would say that's really not proved yet.
Well, and if you look at just to those two examples again once more, if you look at habitat change might be what's causing it in Germany, while climate change might be what's causing it in Costa Rica. So it's not the same.
Yes.
Could be a whole.
Yes, you're absolutely right. It's not necessarily a single cause. And, you know, that's true of so many groups of, you know, we are, you know, that was the subject of my last book, as you mentioned. You know, we are in a period of extremely high extinction rates and of the sorts of extinction rates that you only see at moments of real calamity for life on planet Earth.
Yeah, for sure. Colette in Eagle River called to say one way to help insects is to vote for candidates who support ecological efforts.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, if climate change is a big driver of this loss of insects, then the only the most obvious way to deal with that is to try to minimize climate change, you know. So there's a lot at stake in this election that's, you know, insects are not on the ballot and insect conservation is not on the ballot, but protecting habitat and protecting the climate, those are on the ballot in a pretty open way right now.
Yeah. Rick and Shano, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I have a question regarding, like, the mosquito people that come and spray for mosquitoes on your property.
Yep.
With the belief of, does it just scare the mosquito away, annoys them, and they go somewhere else, or does it actually kill the mosquito and kill the other insects? There's an interesting read in, I don't know if I can mention other people's publications, but
go ahead.
It's Lake Tides. It's for the Wisconsin Lakes Partnership. In this volume of, you mentioned the monarch caterpillars, how it can affect the monarchs and the caterpillars and the adults up to 21 days later with the residual effect. It also talks about purple loosestrife beetles that are affected by the mosquito sprays. And it also talks about being organic. Well, there is no such term because it could contain perethrin.
Mm-hmm.
And those can hurt the, they can even hurt fish and honeybees, you know, so.
Yeah, yeah. No, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's a huge, insecticides, even if they are derived, sometimes they're derived from, you know, quote unquote, natural chemicals. But, you know, they tend not to be very well targeted. You know, they are aimed at anything that's an insect. And that is, as we've discussed, just a huge, huge group. And so there's the insect that you want to get rid of, which is a mosquito, and then there's the insect you don't want to get rid of, which is the monarch. But it's generally true that, you know, these are broad-spectrum pesticides, and they affect a lot of different organisms. And as you mentioned, they also can affect aquatic organisms. You know, so we're sort of, you know, potentially back to the scenario Rachel Carson described in Silent Spring. We have these new generation of pesticides that many people argue didn't do good enough research on what the impacts were going to be across a lot of different groups of organisms, you know, before we basically dosed the whole world in them. And that's a very disturbing thought.
Yeah, it is indeed. And just to put in one word of positivity for mosquitoes, there are some other birds and bats as well that thrive on eating mosquitoes at night, and they wouldn't be with us if they might not be with us if there weren't any mosquitoes to feed on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, mosquitoes are... That's another sort of huge topic and huge realm. And some of our, you know, mosquitoes are native, and some of our mosquitoes in different parts of the U.S. are introduced, and some of them are disease vectors and some of them are not. But what happens when we tend to, for example, when West Nile virus was first identified, you know, there was massive spraying to try to get mosquito numbers down, and including, you know, a lot of stuff that went into waterways, unfortunately. And the knock-on effects of all that can be really bad, but they can also be very, very difficult to trace, you know, once again, because we're just not monitoring things. You know, what you don't measure, you're not going to find out.
Yeah, for sure. I was struck, just thinking back to your article, the when you're talking about birds, you mentioned a pair of blue tits can actually, they collect up to 100 caterpillars every day to feed one of their young birds.
Yeah, caterpillars are, you know, a lot of birds rely on caterpillars to feed their young. That's how they fledge, you know, that's how they get a nest full of baby birds to the size where they can fledge. And so, you know, one of the great questions in terms of insect numbers is, once again, are we seeing these knock-on effects up the food chain? And, you know, many of your listeners probably read or heard about a study that came out about a year or two ago looking at bird numbers in North America and saying that we've lost about a quarter of our birds in North America over the last 50 years. That's just a sheer number of birds. And the question there, once again, not unlike the question for insects, is there multiple causes for this? Is it a lack of food? So these are, you know, huge unanswered questions at this point.
Elizabeth, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me, and go plant some native plants out there.
Elizabeth Colbert, author, her Pulitzer Prize winning book, The Sixth Extinction, An Unnatural History, and she had the May cover story for National Geographic on insect decline. Well, thank you so much for listening. Hope you enjoyed the show, and I also hope you stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.